I'll send a couple of questions. So for me, something interesting, like someone coming new to a platform, I always want to know, like, what is this platform about? Maybe someone, you know, comes on the street, sees you, say, hey, you're the guy from Onestro. What is this platform about? You have, let's say, three sentences. How would you describe Onestro to one that never came across the platform?
Onestro offers the capability for private investors to fund consumer loans in European economic area and earn interest. So it's an investment option to diversify what, most of the people already invested, so investing. So that's an option for people to diversify their investment. It's very common for German and Estonians or Balts in general, but for the rest of Europe, I don't think the knowledge is there. So really just describing that you can fund private investments, consumer loans, is the trigger for people to understand, what is it all about?
Mm. I guess, obviously, having more of a dedicated audience that is already aware about peer-to-peer lending, they want to probably dig a bit more into detail. And what would you say, compared to other platforms, is the USP that Onestro can offer compared to other platforms?
I wouldn't be able to identify one USP. I think we are doing what the others are doing, but better. Joke aside, what we're trying to do is to make sure that you have the lowest risk possible. That's really our DNA, risk reduction for the investors. I was telling you, preparing this conversation, that no one has lost a single penny on Onestro since we restarted a new product. And we want to keep it that way. We want to keep it that way so that risk is reduced in the way we select our loan originators, in the way we list our loans, in the way we interact with our investors so that they understand what they're doing, etc., etc. So that's really the core of what we're doing, risk reduction. Then on top of that, we offer a customer service. We have people that can talk your language, you can chat with them, you can send them email, you can call them even, which is probably unique in this field. We want to make sure that the span of your investment makes sense for you. So that's why we're only serving your economic area, because I believe for our investors, it's easier to understand what is going on in Iceland or Baltic states, and soon beyond. We're working right now with Czech Republic, Poland, which are members of European Union. So that's a totally different approach to going to countries with risks. And what we've seen with Russia and Ukraine lately has shown that our choice is proving right.
Okay. Well, risk management as well as the allocation of your loan origination countries is something we can go also a bit more into detail for now. I was curious, or you said you had, like, the standout for you is like the risk management, but also that you have never ever lost funds since your restart, which is a nice bridge to the, let's say, the setup of the company Onestro itself, because there's a bit of a longer past than the previous 16 months. So can you run me through the real origin of Onestro back in, I think there's different numbers out there. There's like a registration for 2014 of the company, but then on the website it says 2016. So can you just walk me or talk me through the origination story as far as you know it?
I'm aware of the full history. So first, 2014, 2016. Onestro was incorporated in Estonian company register in 2014. That was the creation of the company.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 years, the founders, Jack and Targo, designed their product. In the process of designing their product and developing the IT matching this product they designed, they submitted their processes and rules to Financial Supervision Authority. And adjusting based on the comments of the FSA. And it took 2 years, so till 2016, to get the license to operate. And that is why on the website we talk about 2016, because we operate.
The operational start 2016.
Because before that it would have been illegal. but the company has been created in 2014, which takes 2 years, and that's licensing in Estonia. We have this image of Estonia licensing crypto companies within a week, but credit intermediary, it's a totally different story. Mm-hmm. And soon crypto company as well, because Estonia is very keen on making sure that its financial ecosystem is solid and robust and with good players. So this licensing is, took 2 years, which is pretty decent to me, and takes a lot of my time on a daily basis, as you can imagine, because we have we're under supervision, and this word is really meaningful. We are supervised. There's nothing we can do that cannot be overruled by the FSA. For example, even my my outsourced services, I need to submit them. Hmm. If I decide to change one of the outsourced services, I need to submit to FSA what service, why I gave up on the previous supplier, or why I decided not to do it myself or gave up on my team doing it, why I've chosen this one, the new one, how this new one will meet the requirement of the FSA. Even if it's a British guy, he has to fulfill the expectations of FSA, and I have to make sure that he will. So in terms of audit, in terms of transparency, so that's a constant work, which is good, and I really like it. Back to the risk reduction, but yeah, the supervision of the FSA is proper supervision with capital S.
Yeah. As far as I understand, in the beginning you were also issuing loans yourself, whereas now you're shifting more to a marketplace approach. So there was a point where it felt like there was no more new loans issued. Customers or investors didn't know what's going on with Monestro. Can you walk me through that time span? What happened after the operational start and the kind of troubles that the company or the platform was facing then?
That's not proper trouble. I wouldn't qualify it that well. But let me continue the story, because I focused on 2016 and the license, and then I diverged, sorry, my fault. So 2016, start of operation, Yak and Targo were issuing loans on the Estonian market, because the license was for issuing loans on Estonian market. Mm-hmm. 2016, 2018, 19, they were growing the company, doing their work as they used to, etc., etc. And both Yak and Targo are serial entrepreneurs. They have lots of other things. And maybe at some point they were feeling like, I wasn't there at that time, so that's why I'm using maybe. They felt like they would do better in doing something else. So they moved away and sold Monestro to Plus Plus Capital.
Which year or what time?
August 2019. That I know. August 2019... there was, of course, a strategic thought about what can we do with Monestro, how can we grow it further, and so on and so forth. And one of the main driver was scalability.
What?
Scalability. Hmm. Estonia, we talked about it also before this conversation, I love the country, but this is rather small. Mm. So if you issue loans, consumer loans in Estonia, which Monestro used to do, there's one moment you reach a level that you cannot go beyond.
Yeah.
So it was perceived and proved already with our successes, it was perceived that going on listing external loans, so going for the platform model, was a better way to grow and to offer our investors bigger portfolio, more distributed, more diversified portfolio. Mm. And that's the reason why it was decided to go from the loan issuing and pure player of P2P to a platform business model. Saying that, new business model, new processes, new website, FSA. Mm. So the new process was designed, and the new operations were put in place, and that took almost 2 years to resubmit the new process, get the approval from the FSA, and so on.
It was in May 2021?
Yeah, August 2019 till May 2021. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
April, actually, for the approval and so on, but yeah, the relaunch is May, you're right. Okay.
Maybe if I one going one step back, because I feel like that's to stick the finger in the wound again a bit about that time with the former owners. Do you know by chance how big the outstanding loan volume was back then when they decided to stop issuing new loans and just try to preserve the portfolio?
I don't know. When I joined in April 2021, the outstanding portfolio which we covered was around 40,000.
Okay.
But there was 2 years of paying back from the borrowers, so I'm not sure what it meant for the outstanding portfolio when they sold it.
Okay, but as of now, all the portfolios with investors have been settled.
Everybody has been settled, and everybody got his money back from the investments they made on the previous platform. Mm-hmm. We took over the entire outstanding loans or outstanding balance, mm-hmm. and we created accounts for all those old investors, as we call them. Mm-hmm. We asked them to re-verify according to the new FSA rules. And we credited on their account the outstanding balance and the existing portfolio value, principal and interest, of course. Mm-hmm. And some have reinvested with us. Some are still to reinvest. And we are one part of the customer service is also to reach out to those who have an outstanding balance based on the old Monestro and might have changed email, changed phone numbers, but we're chasing them.
That probably forgot about the investment or were writing it off.
We're talking about very small amounts. We have guys with 6 or 7 euros, but as per the law, it's theirs. Being French, in France, if after 1 year you're not claiming it, that's the company's.
Yeah.
In Estonia, it's not the case.
Yeah.
So we have to find them.
That's crazy. Let's just a few words about yourself. So you said you came into the company April 2021.
Yeah.
How did this evolve? What is your background and how did you get to Monestro?
I have a background, so I'm it's going to be long because I'm not that young, but I have a dual training law school, business school in France. I started my career in aerospace, where I stayed for 10 years, a little more than 10 years. Then starting a freelancing business in aerospace and swiftly went to startups, fintechs, and doing freelancing for both aerospace and fintech. And more and more fintech with time, because I think that's more dynamic, more interesting, I guess. Got some additional training in Oxford in fintech, and I'm a certified Islamic banker. We're working with Qatar, so that also made sense. And Malaysia, where Islamic banking has been invented. And e-resident for a few years, got accustomed to Estonian fintech ecosystem, got to know people and got to interact with Plus, and they say, hey, we have that challenge, would you take it up? And I said yes. I don't regret it.
Okay, so with the company for a little over a year, 1.5 years now. Obviously, what came to my mind is, in that transition time between changing of ownership, setting up the licensing then for the new business model of Monestro, obviously we had pandemic in between, where there thoughts about maybe it's not the best time to get in through this process, or what was maybe from your perspective then also the drive also from Plus Capital to say, look, we really want to do this despite economic troubles, or what was the drive from your view? Because maybe that was a question yourself you had prior joining here. So
there are a few things. I think the project of Plus for Monestro is amazing. The vision of Plus is tremendous, and the drive of Plus is also surprising in this world. They acquired the company August 2019 for 2 years. They shut the door, worked in the TP, designing something else, paying people for 2 years. and without revenues, without issuing new loans, without... So that's quite an investment. And the commitment of Plus Plus is still 1 year and a half later, absolutely solid. When I joined, I told Plus Plus shareholders, you know that as any startup, we're not going to make any money for the next 3 or 4 years. And they say, yeah, we know that. And we set the budget before I joined in a way that it's, I wouldn't say it's not a problem, but that's acceptable, that's understandable. So we're not profitable. I mean, our annual reports are available as for an Estonian company, and we're not profitable. We will not be in 2022. I don't think we will be in 2023. 2024 should be the moment when we reach the break-even. Now we have automatized the process in a way that we are lean. We have the backing of our investors, of our shareholders. Sorry, trying to not to mix things here. So from our shareholders, Plus Plus is growing massively. So we're a thin line in their cost structure. Mm. Which we are being cautious with what we spend, so that's also important. So yeah, that's this is probably what made the move. And now, if you want my opinion, I think revamping a business during pandemic is the best moment.
Mm.
Not much was happening; people were wondering, having doubts, not making decisions. Yeah. So that's the best moment to slow down, take a step back, look at what you're doing, look at how you can improve your business. Look at what you want to do in the next 5 years or end of pandemic plus five,
yeah.
Which, as we didn't know when it would be, when this started. So yeah, that's for me. And again, the drive and the commitment of Plus Plus is amazing.
Mm. So obviously when you're owned from Plus Plus, bigger lending company, then you serve as a funding source for them. Let's talk about the financials, maybe also the monetization of Monestro. So I'm guessing from the loan originators, you take like a commission then in terms of, okay, depending on how much they can fund through your platform. Can you talk about the range or how the business model works? I guess it will be like in a low one digit amount of that you get in terms of commission, but maybe you can share how the monetization works on the platform.
Yeah. I mean, one point maybe, Plus Plus portfolio doesn't need us to be funded. I mean, and they're using their usual channel and they're having their own separate business, and not a single penny of Monestro investors goes on Plus Plus portfolio business. So that's very important to clarify. Now, yeah, about monetization and how we charge LOs. So the interest rate we advertise on the platform is net for the investor. So what we do, we get a success fee from the loan originator, which is not based on the volume, but based on the risk they represent. So we have risk assessment of the loan originators, and if they're more risky, we get a little more, which serves to fund a voluntary reserve, because our voluntary reserve is based on the risk itself.
Mm-hmm.
Between 0.35 and 0.65 point, not percent, point of the percentage we get from the loan originator is falling into the voluntary reserve, and it's really again based on the risk that they would represent.
But the commission you earn, can you give a range?
Yeah, it's somewhere between 3 and 7.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We don't have any ALO at 7 right now, sadly enough. But because again, that's part of the element we submitted to FSA, which we treat our loan originators the same. How we decide to charge them, what are the triggering points to go for one level or the other in terms of percentage. So that's very regulated.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, when we talked prior our conversation now, you said like your staff currently 16 people from Monestro here in Tallinn, 6 from Riga.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know numbers, or can you share the, let's say, overhead costs that Monestro is currently having, as well as where it's expected to be then with continuous development?
It would be difficult to share that. I think it's confidential information, if you don't mind. But in general, we can be profitable with an outstanding portfolio that that we believe will be achieved in 2024.
You see where I was going with
that
question?
Yeah, I saw you coming.
But can you talk about, let's say, the amount of the outstanding portfolio then?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we started, and that was also part of our conversation prior to this one. We started in May, so a year ago. And at that time, that was on purpose that we did everything manually. And there was no automatic approval of investments, deposit, withdrawals, even more. except the creation of users and verification of users was automated. But on purpose, we made things manual. If you want to make things manual, okay, you shouldn't get 10,000 new users a day, otherwise it's a nightmare. So we're growing slowly and slowly, and we're piling up understanding of how it behaves on the specific market, how specific investors are growing on specific market. So our figures are not that impressive, and I'm actually proud of it. I'm proud that we managed to build an absolutely robust system and robust company with investors that are solid, loan originators that are solid, and so on and so forth. So now to answer your question, because I'm not trying to escape that question, we're a little north of 500,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But the outstanding volume, 500,000?
Yeah.
To make you become profitable?
No. We're today at.
Ah, today, okay.
Yeah.
But where you need to be, I guess, must be around maybe between 20 and 50 million or...
A little less than that.
Depends, probably. That's why the question about how extensively you want to grow and scale the business, but you know, it goes hand in hand.
And yeah, it goes hand in hand. And we also have... we found... operational niche to improve our cost structure. We've worked on processes, we've worked on automated answers, we've worked on flagging, for example, when we have AML risk, which is a key element for us, as you can imagine. This does not necessarily require to dig into it. We've automatized some behavior that we know are raising questions, to say the least, and the questions are made more easily without having to have a meeting, spending hours on this, and so on and so forth. So we've automatized the processes where we can, so that we are back to the customer service question earlier. We're available, we're serving our investors and everything, but for what we can automatize, we're trying to be efficient. Mm. And this efficiency shows on the figures, on the cost structure. Mm. So, yeah, we're... And also we have expectations that with upcoming products the fee structure would be a little different, maybe a little more profitable. Mm. Even though the advertised percentage would still be, that's important, would still be exactly what the investor gets. But we have new products coming up with different pricing structure. Secondary market, which is coming in the coming weeks, will have a commission as well, as you can imagine. So yeah, that's also what will help, because if we would have secondary market with additional commission fee, that would be without any increase in the team, without any increase in the cost, because the operation would be automated. So that sort of products that will be building up on the existing will bring more value without incurring more costs. Mm. So that's why we're a little less than your figure.
How satisfied are you with the development of the platform? Because I feel like from the outside looking at it, it still feels like there's a lot to improve on, to say like this. I feel like it's, but also just like simple steps like establishing a statistics page to understand monthly funded volume, the outstanding amount, maybe some portfolio data, how it's performing, the share among loan originators and stuff like this. So is that something you're working on? You feel like it's a priority or?
Yes, no. to answer two questions. So first, I'm not being very vocal in general about the statistics. You ask me the question, I'm answering, because I mean, I'm trying to be as transparent as possible. I don't think presenting statistics makes much sense. I mean, when I see my my colleagues bragging about figures, I always wonder what's really behind that.
Or what's behind if you don't brag about it?
We submit annual reports. Everything's transparent. We have people can come in. I mean, you're in the office today. We are an established company for years with people that are known. Ultimate beneficiary owner declared. And so it's not like a crypto company in the British Virgin Islands. It's everything is, even to some extent, somewhat brick and mortar here. And I don't think, I mean, first, we don't have to brag because we're not that big. And
I think it's not the bragging rather than just being transparent and getting investors a better understanding about the figures of the platform. I don't think it's necessarily the bragging element, but just to understand, like, I wouldn't know how many investors do you have at the moment? How many?
A little more than 3,000.
3,000. Is that like from the entire period since the setup, or is it like active investors? 3,000 active investors. And how many loans do you fund each and every month? Now you said like 500,000 is the outstanding amount.
Yeah. Now this, how many loans do we fund on a monthly basis? That's interesting because I don't follow that statistic. And with the auto invest distribution process, we cannot distribute, and I cannot see that. That's an interesting question.
But isn't that something? Because for me, it's always like, okay, a bit like comparison. Look, like this is, I feel like important to understand which direction the company is heading, and you see, like, you can kind of read the trust from. Obviously, there's fluctuation throughout the year, obviously, and there's events and circumstances that can come into play. But in general, I think like it's very good to compare, like, where's the trust developing of a platform, and is it increasing, is it decreasing, and how is the business performing? How satisfied are your investors at the end of the day? So you can, I think, read a lot from those data. And that's why for me personally, and I think many investors are on the same page, would have more transparency or like a better understanding about those kind of data points.
No, I understand. Understand. And really, it's, how can I say that? Growth is one thing, and our growth is tremendous. Just to give you an example, we have had 20% more investors over the summer. And our portfolio grew 40% over the summer. So July and August, which is unexpected to me. I would have expected a slowdown for July and August. So the growth is massive, and we keep on growing constantly, week on week. We're monitoring, not monitoring the number of loans we're funding, but I'm monitoring the outstanding, I'm monitoring the balance between the loan originators, because I don't want one loan originator to be too important versus the other. So that
you said you have a cap at 25%.
It's not a cap for me. So we would slow down. The system is not built in that way yet.
So it's not an official.
Yeah, it's not official. But that's for me very important. For loan originators, it is important that they're not representing more than 25%. I mean, of course, there would be one day, because you get a big investor that goes on one of them, it would go to 26, and I would not cry. But we need to balance. We wouldn't be able to have a 60%. That wouldn't be acceptable to have a 60% weight for one LO on the platform. Hmm. That would be too risky for our investors.
But I guess at this point, you're rather concerned about the investor growth that fuel the funding rather than the loan originator split, because I guess somehow the funds need to come from to also get arguments for lending companies to see there's volume, they can get funding. So I guess
it depends.
The priorities are a bit different anyways, right?
It depends on who I'm talking to. If I'm talking to the loan originator onboarding team, I really cry about new loan originators. If I'm talking to the marketing, I'm really crying about new investors. So you will have to cut that in the interview so that they don't hear. No, joke aside, yes, I mean, investors is the core of what we're doing. so yeah, attracting more investors and attracting bigger investors. We have worked towards private offices and bigger investors than the normal retail one, I would say.
How do you want to win them over?
There are plenty of things. I mean, first, our customer service quality, because the risk is not even a question. I mean, I told you that our DNA is the risk, but for private offices, I mean, it's the risk is a given. Okay, now that this is covered, let's talk about the rest. So customer service, and also we were thinking about for investors above 100,000 to have monthly event online or physical with presentation of the of the current portfolio, of the current performances of the upcoming loan originators we're discussing with, and go into detail. We have an external assessment of our LOs that is done by Wiser Funding, so we would also partner with Wiser Funding on that, so that they would present how they assess, what are the information they're gathering, what is the month-on-month evolution, and all that sort of things. So that would be even for bigger investors.
I would like to dig a bit deeper into the risk part, since you said it's the standout. So what is so special about Monestro's risk assessment when it comes to lending portfolios, assessing loan originator performance? So walk me through the process, please.
Sure. Simple. Due diligence, check the financials. Everybody does that, and that's the first step of a due diligence.
So is there certain parameters that to you stand out that you look at in particular? We say like this, we look at KPIs that, you know, I need to have a certain threshold or...
Yeah, obviously, but that's part of the internal cuisine, so you will allow me not to share those thresholds. But yeah, we do, and for that, I believe we do exactly the same as the others. I mean, there's not just not specific standouts. You look at the financials for the past 2 or 3 years, not younger than that. We're not issuing, we're not onboarding anyone without an history of at least 2 years, so it's either two or more. So this is the simple one. Then we look at the portfolio itself, the loan portfolio of the loan originator. So how it behaved over the past 2 years, what is the default rate? We do some overall look, then we dig into some specific areas if we identify that some are made, some are a little more... have a higher default rate, for example, so we would dig into a specific part of their portfolio. So we do portfolio assessment, basically. Mm-hmm. It's an in-depth portfolio assessment. Third layer is, and that's probably where we differentiate, is the assessment of their methodology. How do you guys determine your debt-to-earning ratio? How do you guys have, what's your credit policy? What are the processes you, as a loan originator, utilize on a daily basis to issue loans? That gives us a very good idea of the risk they're taking and their risk appetite for their own loans. Mm-hmm. So if it meets our risk appetite or not. And then fourth one, which is something I'm really keen on, and that's for me absolutely mandatory, we meet the team. A process can be really cool, wonderfully written and everything, if the person executing that process, one, has no experience, two, doesn't understand what credit business is, three, is not committed, it will not work. The best process in the world without someone proper to impersonate it does not work. So we meet the people. And this is very important for us to make sure that beside the nice figures, beside the nice portfolio history, beside the nice processes, there is someone that knows the business. And the individual connection we have with our LOs is absolutely critical. And meeting them, knowing them, really knowing them. I have the mobile phone numbers of the LOs CEOs, and I can talk to them. When we have a problem, we talk to them. Mm. We're not like sending an email or doing a Slack or that sort of things. We're talking to them, which is, for me, absolutely mandatory. Mm.
Okay, so the personal touch then as well.
And sorry, but with that process, we turned down 2 LOs out of 3 that are coming to us.
Mm-hmm. They're coming to you, or is it like when you reach out, or
both? I mean, we reach out, of course. Some are coming to us. But in the end, that doesn't. I mean, I know Olga hates it when she gets to hello and try to onboard him, and when it reached the level of risk assessment, and say no, this one doesn't qualify.
Mm.
Bit frustrating, but she's tough.
Mm. What's the biggest obstacle you find with onboarding new loan originators? What's like the biggest turnoff? Is it that you probably don't have that big of a volume for them to serve, or what do you feel like is coming from their side, which?
Yeah, the volume
doesn't make them appeal to Monestro.
The volume is the only one. For the rest, I mean, we're market price, we're on it, quality of service, IT connection, exchange of information, fluidity, knowledge of the business. We get everything like the others, so we're very comparable. Now the volume is one thing, of course.
Mm.
We know that, and we're growing organically, and we're getting there.
How frequently do you assess the loan originators?
Monthly.
Monthly?
Yeah, monthly.
Okay. So you run through the entire process then on a monthly basis,
no.
Check on the portfolio, or?
Not the entire process. We don't check the financials on a monthly basis because financials, it's quarterly, as you can imagine, with the quarterly reports, and annually which is a different check with the annual report. Monthly, we don't assess the full portfolio monthly. We assess the full portfolio once a year as well. We do some sample on a monthly basis, and we have Wise and Funding doing the work as well. So yeah, we do it monthly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we tend to publish Wise and Funding reports with our add-ons every month. Sometimes it's a bit forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. Do you have certain, like you said, like 3 years track record is the minimum that you require? 2 years.
2 years.
2 years track record. How is it in terms of skin in the game? Also, like a concept that is largely used, and also to hold them a little bit more accountable, although there's also debates on how effectively that works. So. Do you have certain guidelines there as well, or how do you mitigate the risk a bit more or better?
We have, skin in the game is important in terms of ethics, I would say. So we expect LOs to keep skin in the game. Our average is 15%. We can discuss with other dependent on the volume, some size of loans. If the value of 10% skin in the game is high enough, we could probably live with it. That didn't happen yet, but we have had those discussions internally. Mm. How do we set the skin in the game based on the LO and the LO risk level? So for now, we're at 15%, and we feel comfortable with that. I understand that it's important for the investors. I mean, I get the feeling it's important for the investors, so we're trying to stick to that. But again, we want to be clear that the LOs should perform their duty well in their relationship to the borrowers. So that's part of the spectrum of what they can offer. So we're looking at it. We're making sure it happens, but it's not like a killer thing for me.
Hmm. Okay. You said, or I read somewhere, that you're also working with third parties in terms of the risk assessment. Can you talk me?
Wiser Funding. Yeah, okay. They do an assessment monthly that they send to us, and we add specific elements that we can find based on the information we have with the direct connection with the loan originators, and then we publish them for our investors on the platform. So you need to be logged in to access those reports.
Yeah. Okay, good. Topic segregation of funds. How do you ensure that there's no let's say, misbehavior happening. So to keep everyone's funds in certain place, the company, the investor funds, how does it work?
Well, it's pretty simple. We have three bank accounts. One that is ending with 20, one that is ending with 26, the other one that is ending with 28, the IBANs.
Ah, okay.
28 is the fund of the company, so that's where we get the success fee, that's where we get, that's how we pay salaries, invoices, and everything. Now I'm going to mix it up, of course, because I always do. 26 is the loan originators. So they pay back on this one, we pay them from this one, and 20, so maybe that's 26 and 20 is mixed, but you see what I mean. 20 is the one that where investors are sending their money and where they're funded from. So our system knows that everything that is happening on 20, any transaction happening on 20, should be listed or should have its counterpart on the investor side. And everything that is happening on 26 should have its counterpart on the originator side. Now, any transfer between the two is only approved by me.
Mm-hmm.
So when at the end of the week I get and thousands of euros that need to be sent from the investors to the LOs, we get the full list, which is extracted from the platform, and that comes with a transfer per LO. And then I do those transfers from one account to the other, and then another transfer, which I'm the only one to do, from that account to the loan originators.
Mm. That was a big responsibility then, huh?
Yeah, I shouldn't fall below a bus, otherwise we're in trouble. But that's a big responsibility. But again, I was telling you we're growing step by step, and we're trying to understand what we're doing really. It is very important for us to see the various behaviors and to really be into the process itself before being able to automize it the right way.
Mm.
So that's why this is something that is not happening automatically, and I don't think it will ever.
Mm.
This, all right, even if we have 25 loan originators, that's 25 transfers once a week, twice a week, I can take it.
It depends now, obviously, because you said like a lot of things happen manually in your business. So maybe when you have really like ambitions of climbing high the ladder, at some point you need to automate certain processes as well.
We have lots of processes that are automatized. We used to have an approval of all investments manual. So we would have, you would come on the platform, create a profile, get verified, fund your account. And then you would select an investment. We used to have it as manual approval. So in the morning, 9 a.m. Estonia time, Ilmar, Delphine, Enrica, Olga would come and say, approved, 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 checking if things are right, if things make sense, etc., etc. We don't do that anymore. We used to do it to understand what would be the pattern of our investors so that we would best serve their interest and their and would design a product that would meet their requirement. Now it's not the case anymore. We would have approval of the first investment just to make sure you're verified and everything is cleared, and then the rest would be totally automatic.
Mm.
Same thing for deposit. If you deposit, it's up to 10,000 now. If you first deposit, we approve it. Second, if it's below 10,000, it's automatically approved, so it's directly on your account. If it's above 10,000, we approve it because it's a big amount, so we want to make sure that there's no specific mistake. So
I think it's also required from the...
The commitment is to ask for, to the FSA again, is to ask for source of funds above 15,000 for our private investors and 25 for company investment, because company can invest on an escrow.
Yeah. Okay.
But we set the threshold at 10. We used to have it at 1,000, but there was too many.
Yeah.
So we moved it to 5, and there was too many. So we now have it to 10, and probably we'll shift it to 15, because there will be one moment where we do not see any situation where this manual approval brings value. Then we stop it and we automatize it. So that's really how we proceed.
Mm. Okay. one step back, the segregation of funds, is it like then all coming through the same bank, or do you have different partners?
No, same bank, and that's we use SEB, which is a Swedish bank, and we have other accounts, but they are used for as a backup or for other type of expenses. But again, the company money, the investors and LOs are on SEB accounts, and that shouldn't be changing.
Good that you said this last word. So you have no intentions to maybe look out for and sort of e-money institution license. So you got separated IBAN accounts for investors, maybe then supervised also from other authorities about the fund flow. Or
I mean, we are supervised back to FSA. We're supervised on a constant basis. We have a report to provide to them and everything, and they check with our bank. And with our banks, if we would have multiple, Now to your question, no, we're not going to do that. And if we do it, that's going to be for a totally different approach. In building new products, we could think about it, but that would still be money in through institutional bank, money out through an institutional bank. So you would have that traceability.
Lastly, maybe a few, always like the outlook a bit, like what Monestro is planning, what you're looking at, let's say in the short, the mid, the long term, I don't know, maybe from 6 months to 1-2 years, 3-5 years. So do you have a certain agenda at Monestro, the milestones you want to achieve, and which of them can you share with me?
I can share the very short term. So by the time this will be online, the website will have two additional languages, French and Spanish, to best serve our French and Spanish customers, with customer service representative, investor relationship manager speaking their language so they can talk to. So there's that's quite something for us, because we want to intensify the distribution of investors between the countries. Geographical distribution is for me very important on both sides. We cannot have only Baltic loan originators, and we cannot not have only Baltic and German investors, because any downturn would create an issue for the loan originators or for the other investors. So it takes two to tango, and we need to be very balanced on both sides. And those caps that we're mentioning, 25% per LO, I mean, I'm not expecting to have an investor that is 25% or more of the full outstanding portfolio, but we want to make sure our investors are also balanced in a way. So we want to increase our footprint, and that will help us to grow, let's face it, as well. So this is one thing. Referral has been launched a couple of days ago. We have secondary market coming up before Christmas. Now with IT development and our level of requirements in terms of quality and lack of failure might be a bit delayed, but secondary market is progressing well, and the first test we've done is really satisfactory, so we expect that it would be ready before Christmas. Now for next year, growing, and the following will probably be initiation of new products. That's difficult to tell. We have a few candidates. We're investigating options, but that would allow investors to distribute their risk and their investment portfolio between consumer loans, of course, because that's the core of what we're doing, to other loans and to maybe other type of investment products. That would first talked about it, DNA thing, risk as low as possible. Risk zero doesn't exist. So that's, but risk as low as possible. Money flow so that you can have the liquidity with your asset. One of the work we've done is also in having rather short-term loans so that people can get their money back in, out, and be very fluid. That's very important for us, because I think that's the value of the product as well. So we're going to intensify that, secondary market being one option. So that's the new product we're thinking of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I also feel like, I think you sent me also the maturity is on average about 4 months.
Yeah.
So then the question is, for me personally, yes, secondary market is nice, but if you're already in the short term business, then, you know, it's not the main focus, at least from my perspective. But
yeah, and secondary market, if you want to liquefy your investment, you have to give a discount. I mean, even to the buyer, not to mention the commission. But so yeah, mm-hmm. the short term loan, or short as possible, we have loans that are less than 30 days today on the platform that are very appealing, and we have loans with 6 months, which is pretty fine. And so yeah, mm-hmm. we have that's something, and we're working on a different approach to some of the existing consumer loans to reduce the time of commitment of the investors.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what do you want to say with that?
That should be out before Christmas as well. So, but you'll be the first to know, I promise.
Okay. I forgot one point, how you call it, voluntary reserve that you also require from loan originators. How does it work?
On any success fee we're charging to the loan originator, we get between 0.35 and 0.65 percent of the value.
Mm-hmm. Okay. With the purpose of?
With the purpose of one loan originator going bankrupt, that will serve to pay as much as possible to the investors.
Mm-hmm. 0.35 to?
0.65. So when I charge 6.65% to LO, 65% goes to reserve and 6 to my expenses.
Mm-hmm. How big is that reserve right now?
Do the math. 6% of 500 and then 1% of that. So.
Mm. But is it like intended to cover any loan originator default, or yeah, I guess so. So it's not for one particular.
No, it's combined. Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's supposed to cover everyone. But again, I mean, the volume of the reserve is commensurate to the actual value. We've been asking the FSA if that would be okay with them if we go beyond the commitment of this voluntary reserve and say, okay, we're going to put 300,000 right away on this voluntary reserve. We're waiting for the answer. Because we wouldn't be allowed to do it without their approval.
Okay, but that means you have the intention to proactively enlarge this voluntary reserve from your side.
Yeah, to prime the pump, let's say. To put something that would be meaningful versus the actual commitment of the investors, and then have the voluntary reserve being funded as a normal process on top of the existing value.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I mean, again, risk reduction. We come into risk reduction.
Hmm. That's a very noble move, I guess. Why did was it just a number thrown out, 300,000, or this is the number you're looking at?
No, that's basically thrown out, as in cover 60% of existing, and probably 1/3 of the existing at the end of the year.
Hmm. But you want to maintain a certain ratio always there as well.
No, it would be, I hope it will be too difficult in a few years from now.
Because obviously when you, you know, 300,000 reserve for 500,000 portfolio is very generous, seems like a free lunch almost.
Yeah, it's a free lunch. Yeah, it's a free lunch, but I am so comfortable with my ELO selections that it will never be used.
Hmm. Well, you don't want to maintain a certain ratio, but you just want to, you know, like showcase it.
Yes, and to bring confidence to the investors. I mean, we're talking about risk reduction and confidence. You were talking about transparency, blaming us for not being transparent enough, which I'm trying. I'm still trying to be. We want people to trust us, and they should. We're working hard, the people are working hard to build that trust. And as I said, no one has lost a single penny on Monastro, and that should remain the same. And any sign to the market that we are a trustworthy platform, that we're helping them invest their money like it would be ours, reducing risk, making sure it works, making sure it brings value and brings profits to our investors, not going crazy about amounts that would be unrealistic, unreal to some extent, is one way for me to show that we're trustworthy. And this is what we're doing. Everything we do is to build trust and to convince people that we're reducing risk for them.
But I mean, I can play it right back. I mean, I think the, you know, as soon as you become transparent and also showcase, look, this is currently the amount in the voluntary reserve. This, again, transparency leads to trust. I think it's something that you can just benefit from that in the long term, short term as well. But
we're working on it, and we'll go through that. Yes.
So when do you feel like this increasing voluntary reserve will be approved then by the FSA?
I honestly can tell. FSA is very busy with lots of regulations these days. Crowdfunding regulation that is changing, crypto that is changing, and so on and so forth. They don't have any commitment in terms of time. It's not like in French administration that I know, well, if after 60 days they haven't given you an answer, that means that they are okay. FSA doesn't work that way. So we're ready anytime they're up. Now, doesn't change anything, because again, that will never be used.
But will it be done by the end of the year?
My expectation is yes. Expectations.
Okay, and you're eyeing at 300,000 euro.
Yeah, but they can tell us, no, it's too much, please reduce it. They can tell us, if you want to do that sort of commitment, you should go to that level of your portfolio. They can comment anything on that.
Or why would they have a problem with straight up company decision to increase the security buffer for investors? What would be their argument?
I can't think of any. That doesn't mean I know the Estonian law enough. So sometimes the reason are based on the ethic, on the situation, on what they see with the future. So I cannot tell.
Interesting. Very interesting.
It's a matter of transparency, and nothing can be done importantly without being reported or vetted. So that's why we're doing it. Other than that, I mean, in general, I don't see why they would have a problem, honestly. But that's the process. We need to submit, they say yes, and then we go. Before that, it would be a mistake.
I know that due to personal experience, the share capital for private limited company is 2,500 euro. I think you've increased it to 250,000, is that correct?
Yeah, 252 something. That was the case even before the acquisition. I think that was the case.
Was there a specific reason? Was it a requirement from a regulatory side, or was it just to increase also here a bit, like the?
No, there's. I don't think there's a requirement for that.
Yeah. So you just wanted to increase a bit the safety, or to?
Again, that was made before I was here, so here it's difficult for me to say.
Okay. All right. Well done. Do you feel like from your perspective there's really topics left out, or something that you think is worth addressing now in the case of Monastro?
No, I think we covered pretty much all the items, the LOs, the way we select them, the investors, the way we treat them, the future, how solid we are becoming and growing. So yeah, no, that's always a great pleasure to talk about Monastro. I mean, that's of course I sleep Monastro, I eat Monastro, I drink Monastro,
and how does it taste, Monastro?
Tastes good, tastes fun. We have a great team. I mean, I can only advise you to follow our Instagram. I mean, we have team events. We have yesterday was Skate Day, and last
so some leftovers.
I don't think there is. And last Monday we had a cooking class all together. So from 5 we started cooking together, and we went all the way through the night. So that's and Friday we went for bowling, and we have that energy in the team. And no, this is a brilliant company, really.
How are you personally investing? Do you invest on a Monestro, for instance?
I do limitedly for one reason. I do to know what is happening as an investor. So I do it on my personal email address with small amounts so that I receive the communication. I see when they come. I'm a customer. I feel like a customer at some point. We, as Monestro employees, are not allowed to invest too much.
Where's the threshold?
I think the phrasing was reasonable. That's FSA requirement again. because one of the thing is, let's assume I'm investing on the loan originator. Let's not name anyone. Let's call it loan originator X. I know because I heard the Hello onboarding team that this guy is not really going well. We're going to delist him soon. I would put everything on secondary market, and that's not acceptable. So if we're talking about 500, I think my current portfolio is 750. If we're talking about that sort of amount, that gives you a proper view of what's going on, the proper understanding of the product and the features. But you will not be using the information you have to get an advantage over others. So that's why investment from a Monestro employee on Monestro platform is not encouraged.
Are you exposed to other lending platforms in the Baltics? Obviously solely for research purposes?
No, beyond that. I mean, we have competitors that are doing great and
like which?
You will allow me not to answer this one. but there are some that are doing great. Some that appears to me pretty risky, but so I'm on quite some for research purposes and on little for personal purposes, because again, P2P is a good investment option. And you have serious people, and I can only advise people to do, and most of the financial bloggers show that, invest in various platforms, distribute your risk. Go on A, B, C, and Monestro. put more on Monestro, I guess. But
reasonable.
That's an interesting market with the current inflation. 10%+ of interest of return is just not achievable anywhere. So yeah, no, I would be stupid not to. And I don't see any reason why this market should flip and turnaround would not be. Investing on platform is making sense for me personally, and then on the research side, of course, that allows me to see what is going on. Yes, too, with our friends.
Can you share like your overall investment portfolio, like the allocation of it?
The overall investment portfolio, if we're talking peer-to-peer only, let me keep the rest of my personal life aside, we're probably around 100,000, and it's distributed on 3 platforms.
Okay, but you don't want to share the broader picture? Like, if you go into stocks, real estate, crypto, what do you fancy as a personal investor?
As a personal investor, I have, of course, some exposure to crypto. I have a bit of real estate, and in France, we have that product that is called life insurance, which is basically a basket of stock that is created by either insurance company or banks, and then they would have this security, aggregated security, and then would play with it with professional traders and would get you a return that you can only get at retirement or at the moment you die, and then your heirs can get it. So they have also that sort of structured products.
Okay.